and thanks for joining us on KVCR for KVC Arts, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, we'll hear from KVCR's Madison Ament and a group here in the region rewriting classic folk and labor songs to something to connect to today. We also welcome back once again mandolinist Evan J. Marshall. Evan's background is at the same time a blend of bluegrass, western swing, and classical. We'll address the classical in just a moment, as when Marshall performs his Mr. Solo Mandolin act, he goes well beyond, well, much of what a person might expect. It's a mix of so much.
It's not the mandolin repertory as such. I tend to do transcriptions of some of the great pieces of the classical repertory. There will be my transcriptions and arrangements of things that are fairly well known to classical music aficionados. The Ave Maria of Franz Schubert.
Sure.
Handel's Messiah. The Air from Bach's Third Orchestral Suite.
Is that the one that's also called Air on a G-string? Or is
Air
that something?
Air on a G-string, right. Cool. Although in the original version, the solo line doesn't find its way to the G-string very often. It's the same piece.
Okay.
And some originals of mine. My original compositions tend to be neoclassical. They tend to sound like they were written in the 19th century. I have an original set of variations on the Ode to Joy theme from Beethoven's Ninth Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
A set of theme and variations for solo mandolin, which is modeled after Schubert with the somewhat comical title Vanilla Schubert.
I just an hour and a half ago, I watched you explain that to some folks at some coffee house somewhere. I couldn't tell you where, but it was just a YouTube clip. Well, you know what? This is directly related. Due to, say, your work with the Riders of the Purple Sage, and then your classical performances as well, or classically based, let's say, any fans either just blown away or maybe horribly disappointed when you go from Orange Blossom Special into Handel, into Caravan, just switching genres severely? I guess most people would be impressed, but do you have anybody walking away saying, my God, I was looking for more bluegrass?
I suppose it takes all types. The other day, I was perusing YouTube and watching some Hilary Hahn videos, and there's this one particular video where it said something like 200 likes and 5 dislikes, and I just thought, goodness gracious, who in their right mind could possibly dislike a performance by Hilary Hahn?
Yeah.
So, you know, I suppose there's no pleasing some people, and that having been said, at a Riders of the Purple Sage concert, Cody almost always gives me a solo mandolin moment, and I usually use it to play the finale of the William Tell Overture, because of course everybody knows that there's a Western tie-in. It was the theme music for the Lone Ranger TV show, and so it's almost always very well received. On a rare occasion, I will actually open a Riders of the Purple Sage concert with a mini set of solo mandolin. I might play several pieces, like the Ave Maria, the Handel Pastorale, and then close things out with the finale of William Tell.
Thank you.
Generally, I mean, the usual response is that people are very appreciative. You know, variety is the spice of life. I know that some people, I imagine, when they go to a Western concert, want to hear nothing but Western classics. And there's some people, when they go to a classical music concert, hope for nothing written later than 1880. But, you know, a friend of mine, great jazz guitarist, Bruce Foreman.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the Aquarium Rescue Units. Yeah, okay, well, that was one of his albums, but I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, these days, if you see Bruce live, usually it's in the context of his own Western group called Cowbop. And okay. It's kind of Gene Autry meets Charlie Parker, meets Bruce Foreman. I mean, you know, Bruce is one in a billion of musical talent.
True.
But Bruce has his expression about genre bending. And I know when Bruce does it, with his doing Back in the Saddle Again with these extended Charlie and Dizzy style bebop unisons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God bless him for it.
That people eat it up. You know, I mean, it's also played very well. I think the whole reason that we musical artists become musical artists instead of something more reasonable is because we love it so much it would break our hearts to do something else. And so since I love the craft so much, I tend to put everything I can into developing it. And hopefully the people love it.
Do you feel a responsibility to, I know you give lessons, you take in students, but do you feel, I truly feel, a responsibility to pass this on with so much missing from arts education nowadays, different than when you and I were kids? So much is gone from what we got when we were kids.
Yeah, I hear you. I know in California, just when I was in high school, that was when there was a ballot initiative called Proposition 13, which drastically reduced the amount of property taxes that went toward education. And so all over California, orchestra and concert band was cut out of the high school curriculum, and it had a very tough time finding its way back in. You know, the arts, well, the arts are the first thing to go because it's not a practical part of the education that will help a person eventually be able to have a career. So the arts are not a necessity, and I think the arts are a necessity. The arts are a large part of what help us to realize that life can be beautiful, you know, and inspiring. And so certainly I feel a responsibility to carry the torch. It's kind of like the Olympic torch, you know, that you carry the torch and then you light the torch so that someone else can carry it a ways further. I look forward to the day when I can do conservatory teaching. There's just not that much call for mandolin in the conservatories, although there's a great exception to that statement would be the scene at Berklee School of Music in Boston. I believe John McGann, the mandolin professor at Berklee, by this time I think he has about 20 mandolin majors.
Oh my.
At the Berklee School of Music. But that's the exception. Hopefully in the future the mandolin will be welcomed into the conservatories the way that the guitar has been in the last 100 years.
Yeah.
I do my share of teaching at mandolin conferences and mandolin camps to try to provide some inspiration for the mandolinists of the future.
Nice, nice. So many performers that I've spoken to recently, I mean, huge, huge people that performed in front of, God knows, 300,000, 500,000 people. Yet on Sundays, they'll do just quiet lessons or charity concerts. Stanley Clark, for example, does every year scholarship benefits. It's the Stanley Clark Foundation. For that very purpose, with arts education going away, trying to raise money for kids to get what some of us used to get. you're at a very good age to have seen the birth of public radio, NPR. And of course, this is the, I'm calling from an NPR station, which, you know, I see is so different than commercial stations. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on the value of public radio versus commercial.
Oh, boy. For what I do, there's no comparison. You know, just that if you want to see something that is not hip-hop or rock and roll, I mean, with all due respect to all art forms to which people devote their lives, there are certain things that dominate the commercial media. But to see classical music or to see bluegrass, two of my great loves, it's public broadcasting or nothing. You know, the last time I watched Austin City Limits on PBS, it was to see Steve Martin. Steve Martin has been touring of late with comedy-laden bluegrass show, and he's touring with the Steep Canyon Rangers, one of my very favorite bluegrass bands of the present day. And it was just an incredible, incredible performance. And whereas, you know, during that tour, you might have seen Steve and the Rangers on The Tonight Show for one song, to actually see a one-hour concert set as was presented on Austin City Limits. And just, you know, Beethoven didn't write three-minute symphonies.
He wasn't radio-friendly.
Right, or Tonight Show-friendly. You know, this is just an example. Is besides being a whole lot of fun, this Steve Martin with the Steep Canyon Rangers program, it was just an exceptionally well-composed and paced concert program that just happened to have a whole lot of laughs in it as well. And only on PBS, without public broadcasting, and PBS and NPR, and gosh, it's not called PRI anymore.
Yeah, Public Radio International became, what, American Public Media, I believe?
There you go. American Public Media. And where would folks who do the kind of thing that I do be? And in fact, I've actually had some of my material that has been released on Rounder has been used for those 30-second musical segues on All Things Considered.
Really?
Yeah, and so a classmate of mine at Occidental College, class of 1980, became head of programming for NPR for a while. And I saw him at a class reunion, and he said, "Hey, Evan, have you been listening to All Things Considered? I'm using some of your Rounder cuts for the transition from story to story." Wow.
Oh, wow.
Bless you, my friend.
That's fantastic. You just got so many more listeners than you thought. Wow. Better than being the hottest ringtone to be featured on a cell phone somewhere. Well, that's fantastic. Yeah, I was able to speak to Arlo Guthrie about this and Stanley Clark as well, and just about public radio. And so I appreciate hearing that as well. Of course, that's my background too. So I don't have so much interest in talking to people like Gene Simmons or whatever. I'd rather talk to the people that I've been putting on the air, the people that are... Is off the beaten path a good word for it?
Yeah. Certainly. The road not taken, and that has made all the difference.
Yeah.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Evan Marshall for this edition of KVC Arts. Later in the program, KVCR's Madison Ament has more on a group of musicians trying to connect with music the hundreds of thousands of warehouse workers in the region. First, though, back to Evan J. Marshall once again. Evan is a mandolinist extraordinaire, and it was a treat to be able to speak with him as he was getting ready to perform in the region. Just ahead, discipline and practice, and the joy to be found through it.
I talked with Paul Rogers, and I asked him the standard kind of what has he been doing right all these years, or what kind of advice did he ever receive that he'd like to pass on. What he told me was that his manager from the early days, that is, when he was a teenager in somewhere in England, I couldn't tell you, but he said the four things, in essence, that he and his mates had been doing all along that they'd been doing right. One, get to the gig on time. Two, play well. Three, get paid. And four, make it home safely. There was no, you know, a Taoist philosophy or something, which is what I was expecting. I was expecting something really deep and profound, and it was really as simple as that, those four basic concepts or precepts. So you? I mean, if you were to pass something on, you know, your students, or in this case, the folks that are going to listen to this interview right here, what could you advise somebody if they want to be a success? Get a day job? What can you suggest to somebody to help fuel the passion and yet remain a success and happiness without having to push your 8x10s everywhere?
Well, you know, I don't have a very big staff, so if if 8x10s need to be sent out, I tend to be the one to do that. So there's a certain amount of that that happens. But boy, I think my best nugget of advice along the idea of Paul Rogers' suggestion, play well, I would say prepare well. One of the things that, and I don't think this is just a problem for this generation, people kind of lose sight of the joy of discipline. Especially now, if we want the answer to a question, at least at a superficial level, we don't have to be very good researchers anymore. We can just Google something and find out what the quick answer is on Wikipedia. But there's the joy of discipline, and I'm a real big believer in that. You know, one of the things that I've heard all my life is people say, well, I play a little bit, but I didn't want to practice music so hard that it became not fun anymore. And I've always thought, good grief, I have so much fun because I've worked my fingers to the bone. I mean, I cannot tell you how much joy it brings me to be able to give a performance of this repertory that I've worked so hard to prepare. The piece that has become my signature, my solo mandolin arrangement of the finale to the William Tell Overture, that was a double dog dare from my brother. He said, Evan, I got an idea for you. The Lone Ranger theme, work that up as your signature, as your solo signature, because it's classical music, it belongs at Carnegie Hall, it's got a Western tie-in, so you can play it at the county fair. And I thought, well, there's just too much going on. There's no way I could do it as a mandolin solo. But he was persistent, and he was also right. So this segment of music, this one movement of the William Tell Overture, takes about 3 minutes and 20 seconds. I spent about 3 or 4 hours a day working on the transcription for a month. Then I woodshedded it 3 or 4 hours a day for 5 months. This was just about all I did. So working on this 3.5 minute piece was all that I did with my work day for 6 months. I think the preparation to debut performance ratio was about 10,000 to 1.
Wow.
And people might think, well, that's crazy. That must have sucked all the joy out of it to dissect it that hard for that long. It's like, no way. I've since performed it about 13 or 14,000 times, and it's still a challenge. I mean, it's absolutely at the edge of my technical abilities. And every time I perform it for a new audience, look out into the audience and see faces I don't recognize, to an extent, it becomes new all over again. So kind of the classic complaint from students about, I don't want to work so hard at it that it sucks all the fun out of it. Oh, no. Sometimes great discipline can can lead to the biggest dose of fun of all.
Gosh, that's a perfect wrap-up point. I'm sorry, but it leads me to another question. Not long ago, also, I was talking with Branford Marsalis, and he said several times during the interview, I'm so thankful I have it on tape because nobody would believe me, but he keeps on referring to himself as a lazy sod by nature. And if it were up to him, he might just be doing some sort of rhythm and blues somewhere. But when I talked to him, he was in the middle of a Heitor Villa-Lobos concert. And so it was, well, it was a different type of music form. And he said that he enjoys performing classical music because it forces him to practice. He doesn't rely on the familiar tropes, but rather he is forced to stack a certain set of notes in a certain way. So I'm curious about your take on one style versus another, what you enjoy more, and if you can directly relate to that type of thing.
A couple of responses. One is, it takes all types. I tend not to practice because I have to. I tend to practice because I'm so excited about the next brick wall that I'm going to break through. you know, and I just rather than having a concert deadline, oh gosh, I better practice because I have this concert booked. Rather, I'm the one who's so busy practicing, I forgot to book concerts so that I can get paid for all this stuff I've been working on.
So it's more of an exciting opportunity for you rather than something to force yourself to do.
It's certainly been that way for a long time, ever since that Orange Blossom special experience of just being so excited about what I'll be able to do on the instrument if I invest some hard work. It's not like the list of artistic things to do is getting any shorter the harder I work. No, the harder I work, the more things I figure out, wow, I'd like to do this before I stop playing.
So you're still discovering.
My artistic thing, list of things to do is getting longer and longer the more years I put into it. And then as far as doing different things stylistically, I think that's been a great thing for me to, if you just do one thing over and over again, you start to lose some perspective. I mean, if Branford likes to mix up the jazz and the classical, and I know his brother Winton does as well, just playing on all these different styles, it helps keep it all alive. You know, people look at me like I'm out of my mind. I tell students at mandolin camp they should phrase an appoggiatura in a Mozart violin concerto the same way that Earl Scruggs phrases that opening hammer-on in Foggy Mountain Breakdown.
Mm.
And the more styles you immerse yourself in, the more you realize how much there is that does transcend style, how many aesthetic principles there are that jump from style to style to style, as well as the things that are part of one style and not of another. And then there's the, you know, I mean, it is possible, I suppose, to get bored with a steady diet of solo mandolin work, and then somebody would call me and say, hey, I got a job for us to play bluegrass in somebody's backyard. Oh, okay. And then I get to relive the joy of playing bluegrass for 2 hours at a time, and it rejuvenates the whole musician.
Nice.
For this edition of KVC Arts, it's been Evan Marshall, Mr. Solo Mandolin. CDs, performance dates, lessons, all at evanjmarshall.com. Before we close the program, we have a piece from KVCR's Madison Ament to go into it with a bit of Woody Guthrie.
Lots of folks back east, they say, is leaving home every day, beating a hot old dusty way to the California line. Across the desert sands they roll, getting out of that old dust bowl. They think they're going to a sugar bowl, but here's what they find. Now the police at the port of entry say, you're number 14,000 for today. Oh, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, folks, you ain't got the do-re-mi. Why, you better go back to beautiful Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Georgia, Tennessee. California is a garden of Eden, a paradise to live in or see. But believe it or not, you won't find it so hot if you ain't got the do-re-mi.
That's Woody Guthrie to connect us to this closing segment. A group of musicians here in the Inland Empire want to use music to connect the hundreds of thousands of warehouse workers in the region. The group, called Do Re Mi IE, is rewriting traditional folk songs to reflect the struggles of workers who are fighting for better conditions. KVCR's Madison Ament has more.
A group of musicians here in the Inland Empire wants to use music to connect the hundreds of thousands of warehouse workers in the region. The group, called Do Re Mi IE, is rewriting traditional folk songs to reflect the struggles of workers who are fighting for better conditions. About a dozen people gathered one evening last fall at a union hall in Riverside. They sit around folding tables in a multi-purpose room with whiteboards and a few AFL-CIO flags on the walls. It's a songwriting workshop. Becca Spence Tobias and Johnny Miller Jr. are the teachers and founding members of Do Re Mi IE. They tune their guitar and banjo, DeBias grew up in West Virginia and says she was around folk music all the time.
And then I moved out here and I saw, okay, the coal mining industry in West Virginia is so much like the logistics industry out here.
The logistics industry here employs some 200,000 people. Many workers in the region have been fighting recently for safer workplaces and higher pay. They've been out on picket lines, and Miller, who's Do Re Mi's lead vocalist, has joined them. He says music was once an important part of the labor movement, but he doesn't hear much singing out there.
If we could bring these songs back and show up at pickets and teach them to everybody and get this kind of revived going again, it would really like invigorate and revitalize the movement, I feel.
DeBias says she hopes the workshop helps empower people to write their own songs.
A lot of people think that they can't write, they can't sing, but this music is all about the folk and how everybody should be able to do it.
At the workshop, DeBias and Miller talk about songwriting techniques like rhyme and alliteration.
Can anyone think of a call and response song that we did a couple weeks ago? That's okay.
Miller shares an example of how to add a new verse to an old song, like he did with Pete Seeger's Which Side Are You On?
I know which side are you on? They put them in warehouses on every inch of land. And if you seek fulfillment, you'd better understand.
Then Miller and DeBias tell their students to take a stab at writing their own songs.
What rhythm are you stealing?
Balghis Muhammad, who's a labor organizer, jots down lines and brainstorms aloud. Muhammad says the labor movement in the Inland Empire is disjointed. People on strike at one warehouse often don't have opportunities to connect with people on strike elsewhere.
Everything moves so fast and you don't really get a chance to like sit down and have those conversations. So I think music is a really beautiful way to do that.
Do Re Mi hopes to collect new songs into a songbook and add them to their repertoire as they perform at picket lines throughout the Inland Empire. For KVCR News, I'm Madison Ahmet in San Bernardino.
Thanks again to Madison for that piece, and also at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, and Shireen Awad. Thanks also once again to Evan J. Marshall. Music Beds and Themes heard on KVCR, it's composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. Find many past KVCR's programs via podcasts through iTunes, NPR One, Spotify, and Google Play, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. You don't have to wait for the membership campaigns. Give at kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.